Among the incidents to which a number is attached, attribute special importance to 1, 3, 4, 5, 7, 8, 9, 18, 14, 84, 35, 36, 42, 45, 48, 49, 50, 54, 55, 58, 93, on the mental side, and 2, 2, 16, 20, 23, 24, 29, 31, 33, 57, 59, 66, 68, 69, 70, 76, 79, 80, 81, 84, 91, 94, 95, 96, 99, 100, 101, 102, 104, 105, 106, 108, 110, 112, 113, 115, on the physical. For the sake of brevity, I propose to consider only these 56 incidents. The same arguments which apply to them will determine the remaining 59. Before going further, I must explain that what I understand by the term mind reading is the alleged reading of the conscious mind of the sitter by the conscious mind of the medium or psychic. The perception of what is in the mind of a sitter by a spirit is a common phenomenon, but it is supernormal, and a proof of the existence of discarnate intelligence. There is no evidence whatever that the subconscious, or subliminal, mind of a sitter can be tapped by the conscious mind of the medium, out of trance. There is some evidence that the subliminal mind of a medium, in trance, can scrutinize the subliminal mind of a sitter, but this again is supernormal. It only means that two earth spirits can communicate just as a discarnate intelligence can commune with an earth intelligence. It is fairly well established that people who are thoroughly in rapport with one another communicate occasionally by thought, also that people who know one another less intimately can exchange spasmodic messages, if preconcerted arrangements as to time are made. This so-called telepathy requires careful investigation. It is by no means certain that a third party is not involved, that a discarnate spirit does not intervene and carry the message from one to the other, as in the case of Mrs. Georgia, Hudson, and myself. What I wish to make clear is that there is no sort of reliable evidence to show that the subliminal mind of a visitor can be tapped by a medium out of trance. I believe that what the visitor is thinking of at the time, his upper consciousness, may be occasionally divined, in fragments, by a medium. The phenomenon is rare. I can only call to mind one case in my own experience, where I explained away an incident to myself by this theory. On the other hand, I have had hundreds of instances where my upper consciousness was full of Remini's soft hyphen senses referring to certain people in spirit life, where the spirits had been named and well described, yet not a word was transferred to me by the medium which indicated that the discarnate entities he or she saw had anything in common with myself. I have put questions, the answers to which were, so to speak, on the tip of my tongue, and there were no satisfactory replies. In many cases wrong replies, in some none at all. Theories of mind reading and telepathy, as explanations of what are, apparently, supernormal phenomena, are altogether overworked. Thomson J. Hudson was the chief apostle of this sort of criticism. He has come back from that bourne, from which he thought, when in life, no traveler ever returned, to acknowledge his error through my pen. Analysis of mental phenomena. Incidents 1. 3, 4, 5 belong to the same group, clairvoyance, but the phenomena are exhibited through three mediums. The reader will observe that my mind could have had nothing to do with these cases. Incorporated, 1. When Dora Hahn picked out a certain photo, I was ignorant what she had in her hand, and was expecting an altogether different picture. She not only brought the portrait to me with perfect confidence, but gave the relationship, returning to the table to pick up another photo of the same earth spirit. I was 3,400 miles from my home, and entirely unknown to the medium. And my wife as a child, did not direct the choice. There is no such thing as spiritism. 3. Clairvoyance of Mrs. Conklin. As I was a perfect stranger to the medium, The correct answers obtained are incomprehensible on any other hypothesis than that of the presence of a spirit. 4. In closing my eyes, I took away from the medium any chance he may have had of mind or muscle reading. I am aware that some investigators may attribute what occurred to these sources, and I should not attach the importance I do to this sitting if I had been able to see the card before my finger was placed upon the letter by Huff. 5. The same observations apply as to 3, and 4. If a medium, not in trance, can read the upper consciousness of a perfect stranger with perfect accuracy, within the first few hours of their becoming acquainted with one another, there is nothing supernormal in these incidents. I am personally of opinion that such a feat is impossible. 7. Interview with Dr. S. and Maggie Gall's year. End party. What clue had Maggie Gall to assist her, supposing she required assistance? Nothing but my assertion that I knew Dr. Hodgson and Dr. Savage. This is a very curious case when thoroughly examined, because I did not know, in life, the spirit who accompanied me to the house. My mind could have had nothing to do with the episode. It never once occurred to me that the deceased young man had any interest in me, nor I in him. He was merely the peg on which hung a very interesting psychic story, told through his father's facile pen, and referred to in his father's study. How could the psychic know, normally, that I had written to Dr. Hodgson? If the spirit of young Savage, no doubt ever watchful of his father, did see and hear me in the church study, and did accompany me to my hotel and throughout the afternoon and evening, all is explained. Remark the reading by the medium of the sealed letter of the young girl, and her swift intuition of the connection between the men sitting on either side of me, her knowledge that I had brought photos for tests across the ocean, of the object of my visit to the States. These items are inexplicable on any theory but that of the presence of invisible people around us. 8 and 9, here two psychics are involved, one private, one professional, both, for the time, in the same house. Neither had ever seen me before that day. Every individual in the house of Judge Daly was a stranger to me, including my host himself. How are we to account for the dripping sailor seen by my kind hostess as she shook hands for the first time? For the name Leroy, which, when inverted, is not unlike the real name Carey. For the clairvoyance of Mrs. Daly during lunch, and the subsequent choice of photos in the drawing room? What normal explanation will stand against the prescience of May Pepper during the meal, uttered with the confidence of one who knows, and which turned out to be correct? That the psychic read the letter in my pocket, pure clairvoyance, must be true, but how did that help her to pick out the three photos, faces downwards, an hour later? Without hesitation, I say the only explanation is the presence of spirits, interested in me, who impressed both ladies. 13 and 14, note the mistake, soon rectified about the identity of the parents of the child R, and the information given by my auntie, bewildering to the medium, who knew the repugnance of the American people to marriages of first cousins. 34 The typhoon message. How, I ask any honest critic, could this be attributed to the action of any mortal mind? Typhoons are rare in the China Sea in May. Both I and my relative had served on that station and knew this. Read the Russian books from Liban to Susha, Erna and Rasplata for corroboration of the facts. 35 A table tilting with the Endicott's. Look at the number of correct replies, the difficult name Kilmarnock, the knowledge of what was in my pocket, the correct name of my son-in-law, and, especially, my inability during subsequent sittings to obtain any similarly precise information. 36 The reader should carefully scrutinize this photo test. Could this have been accomplished by any woman alive without extraneous help? Who helped her? It was not my spirit, for I was entirely ignorant what card she was handling. 42 I draw attention here to the extraordinary behavior of my relative A, his correct impressions under control by a discarnate intelligence, and the corroboration through Mrs. Arnold 6 weeks later. 45 And Auntie, the satisfactory identification of Thompson J. Hudson, the particulars of which were new to the psychic and myself, and the automatic mirror writing in the dark. Observe that Mrs. Georgia had already given proofs of her power of writing with either hand. 48. Note the experiment wanted by Hudson, the inability of the psychic to find her plate holder, the hysterical seizure of Mrs. Georgia, our disinclination to try Hudson's test, its ultimate failure. 49. Message carried by Hudson, Mrs. Georgia's script. Is it reasonable to doubt that this was no mere act of telepathy? What about the description of the floor and room of the hotel? Even the chair is accurately described. 50 is a better proof than 49, that Hudson was a messenger, and that so-called telepathy was not at work in either case. Remark the following. He must speak of Hudson, that's me, in your address. Many people have accepted my hypothesis of the subconscious. I want him to say that he has heard from me. My girl will sit for him here, Rochester, and in NY for James and Hislop in concert. I shall bring F. W. H. Myers and Dr. Hodgson if I can. A few days later I was at Rochester, and Dr. Austin, the pastor of the Plymouth Spiritualist Church, kindly organized a little assembly at the Seneca Hotel to meet me. I addressed the party on several matters, principally the return of the spirit of Thomson J. Hudson, showing the ladies and gentlemen present in the ballroom of the hotel the original automatic mirror script. This little meeting was quite impromptu, though the date of my address in the church, February 26, had been fixed some time. Hudson was mentioned in both addresses. The meeting at New York here predicted came off in a totally unexpected fashion. It was not Professor James but Dr. I.K. Funk who made the third of my visitors. Observe that 2 hours after Mrs. Georgia wrote this script, Dr. Jenkins, Kaiser's Control, at Detroit tells me that Hudson is away trying to impress a light in another city to whom I had sent a message, and the next morning, 5th, Hudson comes to me himself in Detroit and reports that he had carried the message, but did not think the light had taken it all in. He knew that he had impressed her, but thought she only got part of it. 54. The items given in the script to establish the identity of Mr. Myers could not have originated in the mind of either the psychic or myself, for we did not know them. Whence did they come? 55. He has the offshoot of the oak in his pocket, a gold acorn. I had not noticed the shape of the pendant on the chain, nor thought of it at any time, so this cannot be attributed to my upper consciousness being read by the psychic. The latter was totally ignorant what I carried about with me in my pockets. Can there be a doubt that this statement originated with an invisible intelligence? 58. Greyfeather apparently sees me at another seance, and in the public library at Toledo. Whatever may be the true explanation of this remarkable incident, it must be due in some way to invisible intelligence. The most reasonable explanation is that my guide told Greyfeather, if Greyfeather, while using the organism of Johnson, could read my subconscious mind, the incident is of a spiritistic character. Certainly the events of the previous day were not occupying my upper consciousness. Why was Greyfeather inaccurate when giving the name of one of my companions, who, by the way, was 5 feet off, listening? 93. If mind reading has anything to do with these manifestations, why could not Mrs. Ross Eagle Divine, whose picture was inside the locket? The name and relationship were in my full, upper consciousness, and I was expecting to have them given me any second, yet, instead, the psychic hears a voice, it was mine, the locket, but it, the picture, is not I. The identity of the face in the locket was not revealed at all. Analysis of physical phenomena. Incident, 2, must be examined with, 15. In the latter Iola admits that she materialized in New York, and gives a story about a cane, damaged a little in passing through the mind of the medium, but sufficiently correct to prove that she was with me on the night I landed, when, 2, took place. The height and figure which I saw at the materialization seance were correct. It would be foolish to suppose that the graceful form and movements could be simulated by any man. The intense vibration of a form is always good evidence of its reality as a materialization. It is very common where the whole body is made up and not only a part, and frequently occurred in Crax manifestations. The confidence with which the spirit placed herself in my power many feet away from any possible coadjutor is a fact to be taken into consideration, for the mediums had never set eyes upon me before that night, and knew nothing at all about me. I had only landed from England that morning. 16. The appearance and identification of Captain D, an old messmate of my relative, A. Up to this time my relative had scoffed at spiritism, and declared it all charlatanry. I have never heard him scoff on the subject since this evening, February 6, 1905, when the controls worked specially for him, and brought up before his face two or three recently deceased friends. 22 spirit forms are together, showing simultaneously to neighbors in the circle. The deliberate dematerialization of my neighbor's child close to the mother's body was a remarkable sight. When I saw the small face, it appeared to be complete in all particulars. How are we to account for Joey's knowledge of something a lady had said 100 miles off some days before? It was an insignificant remark, which had not taken any deep root in my memory. 23. This was one of the good materializations of Iola. Note, that it was less than life size. The name of my friend in Fiji was Seed, which I think my readers will admit is a very uncommon name. I had not thought of him for years. The speaking of the familiar spirits in the cabinet while we were bringing the medium out of trance was a convincing phenomenon. 24. Another excellent simulacrum of Iola. 29. The test seance with Husk speaks for itself, and does not require any analysis. Great force was exhibited on this occasion, the armchair lifted over my head and put upon the table weighed over 30 pounds, Husk himself must weigh 11 or 12 stone. The voices behind Husk were very clear, and it was quite certain that he had nothing to do with the singing or with his own levitation. Note the position of his own chair when the lights were turned on. 31. Though I have not usually any mediumistic faculty, there are one or two occasions when I have seen clairvoyantly at a séance. In this case I distinctly saw a light emanate from the medium. I have no doubt that it was my guide, who made a practice of standing or floating behind me at a séance. She was frequently described by clairvoyants. 33. In most cases the simulacra of women at Husk's séances are bandaged round the bottom of the face, the nose and upper part only being visible. This is what made it impossible for me to say that the materialization of Iola was ever very satisfactory. On this occasion, however, another relative was presented without any bandage whatsoever. The likeness was admirable, and the test a very important one to me, as the lady in question had, while in life, been much opposed to my views, and, at this time, had not passed over 3 months. The controls took about half an hour preparing this test. I expressed great pleasure at its appearance. Uncle told me it could not have been done if I had not great power. By this I assume he meant giving out power, for I certainly am innocent of any other power whatever. 57. Over anxiety on the part of my guide to show herself spoilt this séance, but it was nonetheless very interesting. The materializations of Cleopatra and Josephine were very fine, and the sudden dematerialization of Edna was one of the most extraordinary sights I have ever witnessed. She doubled up as if she were constructed with a hinge in the center of her body. 59. Attention is specially drawn in this case to the dematerializations, evidently exhibited for my benefit. 66. This was one of the most eventful seances I have ever had. A private message was given to me by Iola on this occasion through the agency of a song, sung by a spirit in accompaniment to the graphophone. The episode was alluded to in Mrs. George's script, a fortnight later at Rochester, in such a way as to make the correlation of the two events absolutely unmistakable. 68. These demonstrations of spirit action are inexplicable on any theory of fraud. A person who could allow himself to be hoodwinked to the extent that would be necessary for a medium to carry through this incident must certainly be placed in the category of individuals who are unable to manage their own affairs, and who ought not to be at large. If I am such a person, it has not yet been discovered by my family, friends, or brother officers. The seal of the letter shows no sign of having been tampered with. The reply letter is sensible, and beyond the mental level of the psychic. My card and another paper are found inside the envelope as well as the letters, and the paper is transferred to my hat in the front drawing room. Not the least curious incident is that the psychic sitting with me in the room is able to tell me consecutively my questions. 69. The profile portrait of my guide. There is nothing to analyze in this phenomenon. It happened as I have stated, and, as it was broad daylight, I cannot plead guilty to the possibility of my being mistaken in any item of this wonderful instance of spirit power. The prepared picture theory and all conjurers' idle stories fall to pieces. Nobody ever did or ever will duplicate this episode under similar conditions. 70 The reader is asked to remark here that I was sitting between the incriminating door and the table, May Bangs being on the opposite side of the table. Anything that was passed under the door from, or to, May Bangs would have to go through me. 76 By a piece of good luck, as I now consider it, the boy who took the Bangs sisters' order for the two panel-shaped canvases omitted to say that they were to be covered with paper. When he returned to the shop to fetch them, he corrected his error. The paper was stretched on in a hurry and arrived wet. I received them in my own hands, and had them under my own control until they were put up in the window. 79 I have no explanation to offer for this incident. The psychic never once had her hands near the inkpot. The incident happened in the full light of noonday. As I have mentioned before, the window has a due south aspect. The ink bubbled away in the pot until it was nearly all gone. 80 Of this incident I can only say that there was plenty of light the whole time, and, with only one person in the room to watch, it was impossible to make any mistake. 81 The light throughout this sitting was not so good as in, 80. But the phenomenon of the dematerialization of the flowers was more remarkable, if such a thing be possible, for they were almost touching me, and at such a distance from the psychic as to render it impossible for her to touch them or the vase, or to see them. 84 The interest in this sitting lay in the marked difference between the speech of the English and American spirits, the recognition of the fact by the old American gentleman who was with me, and the trifling incident by which Sir A. G. identified himself. 91. Here we have some very remarkable incidents, of the visit of Sir Isaac Newton, who gave much information, B. Dr. Jenkins, the control, who is ignorant of what I had been doing at another house in the morning, tells me what Hudson is about and why he is away, C. He also says that Hudson is preparing some good tests for the time when you sit again at Rochester, which is perfectly true if I am to judge by results. 94 The principal feature in this séance is the removal of my locket from the watch chain, its subsequent journey and return to me. Note, my guide possessed in life an exactly similar locket. The size of the hand that took it off my chain was less than half of my own. Dr. Hislop tried to persuade me that this episode might have been due to hysteria on the part of the psychic. I do not understand how any amount of hysteria can reduce the size of a lady's hand or enable her to reach 4 feet. 95 Here, again, I do not see how any amount of hysteria on the part of Miss Ada could give the identity to Mr. Zander which he so much desired and obtained. It could not enable Omayon and other spirits to sing. Mrs. Rhett's clairvoyance on this occasion must be taken as a separate incident. 96 I should think this manifestation by Catherine is one of the best materializations ever obtained through any medium in recent times. The head and bust were apparently complete, the face and hair took up most of my attention, they were perfect in every detail. This was the first time I discovered for certain that forms are not wholly tangible. Viola's antics on this occasion were very convincing proofs of her marvelous activity in taking on and throwing off the appearance of mortality at will. 99, 100, the descriptions of these tests with the Bang sisters are such that I cannot add to them or analyze them with any advantage to the reader. 101, sitting with P. 0. Keeler for slate writing. At the end of May, 1911, I asked my guide if she was present on this occasion. She said she was, but the alleged letter over her name was not hers at all. All the letters were written by Keeler's control, as I had thought. But, Iola added, Mr. Keeler is a wonderful psychic. I cordially agree. The absence of identity in the letters does not take away from their value as proofs of spirit action. It was certain, A. that the slates were clean, B. that he had nothing to do with the writing, C. that a quantity of writing was accomplished in a short time, all audibly to me, without any pressure being brought upon the slates in my hands. 102. There was a wealth of incident in this sitting with Mrs. Rhett. I draw attention to the manifestation of Professor James, Captain Alexander Usbin, Sir Richard Burton, and the unhappy suicide. 104. Sitting with a stranger, Dr. John. We each get our personal friends, and also an historical character equally interesting to both. Two voices speak simultaneously in different languages twice. 105. Ada Newton communicates a fact unknown to either the psychic, or to Dr. John, or myself. Dr. Graham, a physician well remembered in Toronto today, comes and comments upon an operation he had witnessed a few hours before at the hospital. In these cases, Mrs. Rhett was wholly out of it as a possible agent, and supposing, for a moment, she knew all the circumstances, whence the different voices. 108. Iola answers a question which was in my mind before the sitting. The deaf farmer heavily drawn upon. Two voices speaking at once. My niece visits me. The visit of Professor E. J. Stone, FRS, formerly Astronomer Royal at the Cape of Good Hope. These incidents require a great deal of explaining away if fraud on either side of life is to be the basis of inquiry. 110. The visit of Greyfever to me at Mrs. Rhett's and his warning about his medium, Johnson. This was totally unexpected, and, from every point of view, most interesting. As will be seen in the epilogue to the last chapter, Greyfever came over to England in May, 1911, and showed accurate knowledge of what was going on here. He manifested three times in one day at Mr. Stead's country house. 112. This is an extraordinary instance of spirit power, A, because Mrs. Rhett was in a wholly new environment, B, the room was small and not magnetized, and, C, there had been no phenomena the night before, when she sat for her kind host and hostess. 113, 115, visits of Sir Isaac Newton, who confirmed what he had said before, and talked of his experiments on the problem of anti-gravitation. It remains to be proved if there is any sound purpose in these communications. It seems probable that, until we have discovered some means of opposing gravity locally, aeroplanes will never succeed. Whether I was really honored with a visit from Sir Isaac Newton or not, one thing is certain: the hints he gave respecting a musical note opposing the vibrations of gravity did not emanate from me nor from the medium. Correlations by correlation, I mean the interconnection between different seances, proving that spirits are aware, when functioning through one medium, that they have manifested on former occasions, and through other psychics. This is a very important support to the spiritistic hypothesis if it can be shown that the psychics did not communicate their knowledge of a sitter from one to the other by letter or telegram. I must here observe that I am not ignorant of the alleged fact that in the United States there is a secret volume called the Dope Book, by some called the Blue Book, kept by all mediums, which is said to contain the names of residents of different cities and their various degrees of gullibility. I have not yet come across any reliable person who has seen this book, and I am doubtful if it really exists. It seems to me that, if such a record were in print, it would very soon come to light and be public property. All investigators know that professional mediums are not the kind of people who could conceal anything of the kind. Its existence would leak out, if not through them, through the printers. Such records imply an extensive organization and considerable expense, which mediums can ill afford. But it is the duty of all those who claim to have received evidence of the supernormal to examine with care every alleged contrivance by which their testimony may be weakened. Therefore, we cannot safely ignore the repeated statements of armchair critics, that there is a source of information which is the common property of all mediums respecting possible clients. Now, if such a book is in circulation, its usefulness is very doubtful even among the citizens of the United States, for the reason that the mediums, as a rule, do not know the names of those who sit with them, nor when they are likely to come. There is no time after people are seated to make a study of any volume so comprehensive as its alleged purpose implies. In the case of casual visitors from foreign countries, such a book is hopelessly impotent. Take my own case. In 1904, no one in America knew that I was about to pay a visit to that country, or, indeed, that I was interested in psychic investigation at all. In 1908, only two or three trusty friends were made aware of my intended journey, which was to places not visited in 1904-5. As investigators, it was not in the least probable that they would take the trouble, even if they had the inclination and had not been warned, to go round the corner and assist mediums by gratuitously furnishing them with information concerning myself, of whom, by the by, they knew but very little. In 1910-11 strict precautions were observed. It is true that on this visit I went to the same cities as in 1908-9, but no professional mediums knew I was coming, and no incidents occurred that indicated accurate knowledge or recollection of my previous visit. Of the private psychics, such as Mrs. Georgia and Miss Ada Besnett, it may be said that it is quite out of the question that they pay the least attention to any dope book, if such exists.